There is one line they left out. That would be the line when Mary says to her son, "I told you so." So I was around 15 when my family went to my cousin's wedding. It seemed like a really quite posh wedding to me. My aunt, my cousin's mom, her family were all the bankers in town. And my uncle, who was my dad's brother, was the director of the funeral home in town. So they were kind of big wigs. And the reception was held at the club, the country club. Now, maybe you're picturing this in someplace like Manhattan, since I mentioned bankers and such. Maybe you're picturing this in the nicer suburbs of Chicago or Detroit or someplace like that. Not quite. This all took place in a town called Kewanee, Illinois, which is in the middle of central Illinois, farm country. And its claim to fame as you drive into the town is a big orange and black sign with a big pig on the front. Because Kewanee is the hog capital of the world. So that's where this posh wedding took place. And at this wedding reception, held at the country club in the hog capital of the world, they had an open bar. This was a novelty to me because, you see, I grew up in a family where punching cake in the church basement was a standard wedding reception. I see a few heads nodding out there, right? They had an open bar at this wedding. Now, for those of you who maybe don't know what that is, that means you could just saunter on up to the bar, order anything you want, and the bartender would give it to you and not even ask for money. So my eyes were quite wide at the tender age of 15 at this posh wedding reception in the hog capital of the world. I soon found out that that open bar was not accessible to me. However, what was accessible to me was this fountain somewhere at this posh wedding reception dining hall. In that room, there was a fountain that poured forth a steady flow of champagne. And there were these lovely little plastic champagne glasses set all around, and no one there to ask me how old I was. I'll leave the rest to your imaginations. I just broke this story to my mother yesterday morning as she was preparing to preach on this same text, so I don't know what she's going to do with that. So we come to the wedding of Cana, which is a small town in the rural part of Galilee. Weddings in Jesus' day lasted roughly a week. Yeah. So the host had to make sure there was a steady flow pouring forth of wine and good things to drink. It was definitely an open bar situation at weddings in Jesus' day. And Jesus, with a gentle nudge from his mother, steps up to the plate when catastrophe strikes and the wine runs out. Now let's do the math here. I won't tell you how long I was trying to decide what divides into what in order to figure this out. Just remember, I'm a historian, not a mathematician. There are 6 water jugs here, and we're going to round up and go with 30 gallons each. 6 water jugs, 30 gallons each. 1 bottle of wine is 750 milliliters. That equals 0.198 gallons, all right? So 180 gallons of water becomes 180 gallons of wine, which is the equivalent of 909 bottles of wine. Try doing that on the school bus next time. I'll let y'all figure out how many cases of wine that is. Somebody did some math on in some commentary I was looking at that said that's roughly a ton of grapes. Jesus raised the bar on an open bar. Now, if you ask me, this story of water into wine is really a rather odd story. To begin with, it's only in John's gospel, which sets it apart from all the other stories, the other gospels. But even more than that, think about it. This is not a typical miracle story, right? When you think of the miracles of Jesus, and this is not a rhetorical question, when you think of the miracles of Jesus, what do you think of? Healing, right? You think of people getting healed. Maybe you think of demons being rebuked, right? You don't think of water into wine. What an odd miracle. There are no rebukings of demons. No, be silent and come out. There is no take up your mat and walk. There is no your faith has made you well. There's really nothing urgent about this miracle. No one's life is at stake. There's no hungry people needing to be fed with loaves and fishes. It is a case of hospitality gone awry. Wine is needed. Now, this becomes even more intriguing when you think about this. John says this is the first of Jesus' sign. This is his inaugural moment into public ministry. In Mark's gospel, Jesus' inaugural act of public ministry is casting out demons. That's pretty worthwhile, right? In Luke, his first thing that he does in ministry is stand up and deliver a sermon, get everybody ticked off at him. That's next week's lectionary. In Matthew, he launches into the Sermon on the Mount, which goes on for 3 chapters. Here, his first act of public ministry is to create an open bar. John is up to something here, folks. You see, in John's gospel, if you noticed, this isn't called a miracle. It's called a sign. John does not call any of the miraculous, mysterious things that Jesus does miracles. He calls them signs. Because John doesn't want Jesus' disciples, then or now, to believe and follow Jesus because of the miraculous things he does. He doesn't want us to get all caught up into that showy stuff. He wants us to look beyond the miracles and see what they are signs of, to think about and believe because of what they point to. In other words, what's important here is not the simple fact that Jesus can turn water into wine. What's important is what this open bar, what this abundance of wine reveals about Jesus as he dwells among us, God's word made flesh. As he dwells among us, the one through whom we all receive grace upon grace, as the first chapter of John puts it. The one through whom we receive an abundance of grace. So take a look, pull out your bulletins, and take a look at how this miracle transpires. Another non-rhetorical question. What happens? How does he make this miracle happen? Oh, how does he make this sign happen? His mother's got to tell him what to do. He uses what's there. Does he wave a magic wand? No? Does he call out to God? No. Does he make an announcement? There is no wine. I will take care of the problem. Nothing. Huh? And they don't do it. It just happens. It just happens. They put water in those huge containers. And it happens. It's really more about what we don't see that reveals so much to us about this epiphany. It's about what we don't see. The abundance happens in the background. Almost in secret, he gets the nudge. Fill the jars, he says. Draw some out, he says. And the water is wine. No fanfare, no prayer, no giving thanks to God. No looking up to heaven, no touching. As far as we know, Jesus hasn't touched the jars or the water. It happens. There is no evidence that anyone at the wedding knew what was going on except for the servants and the disciples. Right? He had the chief steward fooled. The abundance appears quietly in the background. It's waiting in the wings. Throughout John's gospel, and really throughout all the gospels, wherever God's word is, and I'm using capital W like John does, wherever God's word is, abundance is there also. An abundance of healing, an abundance of welcome, an abundance of nourishment, an abundance of grace. It is there, quietly, waiting in the wings, waiting to be discovered, waiting to be shared. Grace upon grace. Because the word dwells among us. And think about what happens in the Gospels whenever this abundance of healing and nourishment and welcome happens. Those who are rejected find community. Those abandoned at the side of the road are welcomed in. Those believed unworthy of respect become disciples and teachers of the good news. In a culture that tells us there is never enough, never enough time, never enough money, never enough food or water or shelter, never enough room for outsiders, never enough safety, never enough happiness. In a culture that codifies and monopolizes enough, abundance, we are taught that abundance is a reward for hard work and good behavior and healthy living. In a culture that codifies and monopolizes abundance, it becomes a special blessing for the wisest and strongest of peoples and nations. So abundance makes no sense. Grace upon grace makes no sense. I think that might be the point. 180 gallons of water into wine makes no sense. Saving the best wine until everybody's drunk makes no sense. Grace upon grace in a world full of fear and rejection makes no sense. Yet this is how God's word works. Worlds come into being when God's word is spoken. Our world is renewed when God's word becomes flesh. The word dwells among us, and so does God's abundance. It's time we step up to the bar and start pouring.